So we're continuing the Megillah, and Chazal tell us how bad Achashverosh was. But within the story, Chazal also tell us some good points. Chazal say four things were good about Achashverosh. One is he spent 3 years patiently waiting for his throne to be built and to have a correct crown fashioned for himself. He had patience. He was in for the long haul. And that's, Chazal say, we're supposed to learn from him. Sometimes a person's in a rush to get what he wants, and then he loses out. Very often the good things come as you patiently build towards them. The second thing Chazal say we should learn from him was his patience in finding a wife. He's the king, and he waits 4 years searching. Every night, a different date. Right? So that means he dated over 1,200 women.
He's a picky guy.
Chazal don't say that. Chazal say he waited for Mrs. Wright. Chazal say we compliment him for that. That he, even though he was king. I think that here we see the balance and truthfulness of Chazal. Because Chazal, on the one hand, tell us how vile he was and how stupid he was, because every person would hide their daughter from him, the way he was behaving. Yet Chazal say, don't miss out on the correct point that's in him. Meaning, don't forget, when he gets married, he could still summon women every night, which is what he does when Esther doesn't play according to his fashion. So he says, no problem, new pageant. Meaning, he's not limited by marriage. And still he waited those 4 years. That means he waited for Mrs. Wright. Chazal say, he did a lot of things wrong. This is one thing which he did right. Again, the balance. Chazal say a lot of terrible things about him. He wouldn't let the Beit HaMikdash be built. Chazal call him wicked. Chazal call him stupid. Chazal say a lot of things about him. But they say there are four things we should learn from him. Four things that were good about him. So that's point number two. Point number three, it says that he wouldn't do things without asking other people's advice. He knew that there were other angles to things, and by asking other people for their opinions, you only benefit. So that's the third point that's good about him. And the fourth point that's good about him is that whenever someone would do him a favor, he'd write it down. He wanted to remember who he owed favors to. So those are four points Chazal say we could learn from him. Patience till he had the right throne. Patience till he had the right wife. Consulting before taking action. And keeping a record of who you owe what to. That's a big deal. How many people write thank you cards to everyone? How many people write thank you cards to almost everyone? Most people get almost everyone. They don't get everyone. They don't write a thank you card to everyone. He kept a record. So Achashverosh makes a party, and everyone bows. They're all sitting low next to him on his high throne, and there's, of course, the message in that. And we know he loses his wife, kills her, and then he looks for a new wife, and he finds Esther. And Esther doesn't tell him what nationality she's from. They must have had pretty lousy records. I mean, she could get away with that.
Everybody thought she was from there.
That's what they thought, okay. But you see that he couldn't figure it out.
It seems like she was little Van Levin.
Okay. Just saying, you'd think they kept the record. Sounds like Achshverosh has a record of everything else. This, he doesn't have a record. Esther's on the throne. He puts her picture up above his bed, and she tells him in the name of Mordechai, and I don't have a good understanding as to how she got away with this, that she was able to tell him in the name of Mordechai, how come Mordechai had access to her, to tell her that the king's drink was poisoned, meaning I don't know how she justified that. Achshverosh doesn't know there's a relationship between her and Mordechai, unless we'll say that after Haman's decree that no one could approach the king uninvited, so then Mordechai didn't have access to the king. So he only had access to the queen, meaning by Haman making that decree that anyone who comes to the king uninvited could get killed, he was secluding the king and empowering not only Haman, but also the other advisors or the queen. So,
back to what we said before, that Mordechai came to Babel to gain favor of the king to help rebuild the temple.
Right. Mordechai is coming back hoping to rebuild the temple, right. Haman is raised above everyone else. And then everyone bows to Haman and Mordechai does not. Why doesn't Mordechai bow? Because Haman declares himself a deity, a god. They ask Mordechai, why aren't you bowing? What does Mordechai answer? Moshe Rabbeinu told us not to. It says in the Torah, cursed is he who bows to an idol. And he's making himself into an idol. So we cannot. The question here is, was it Jews or not Jews who were asking Mordechai this? It sounds like it was not Jews. And then the question here is, why did Mordechai do that? And you see that Jews held it against him. Jews will come bugging Mordechai and saying, why'd you have to do this? You got us all into trouble. So Haman gets word that Mordechai won't bow to him. So Mordechai tells the servants, Haman tells the servants, go tell Mordechai, his grandfather bowed to my grandfather. Because when my grandfather Esav came to meet Yaakov, so it says, everyone bowed to Esav, right? All the tribes bowed, all the mothers bowed, Yaakov bowed, so he should also bow. So Mordechai tells the servants, my grandfather's Binyamin, and he didn't bow. Good answer for Bini, yeah. He's Binyamin, so that's why, yes. So they tell Haman, and Haman's not so happy, right? Haman didn't get the last word, and Mordechai is not bowing. So Chazal say, Vayar Haman. When wicked people look, when they see, when they perceive, bad things come to the world. It's a recommendation to stay out of wicked people's eye. Chazal say, look at the Torah. Wherever you see Vayar Balak Ben Tzipo, whenever a wicked person puts his eye, there's trouble. Where kind people put their eye, there's blessing to the world. So Haman says, I'm not just taking down Mordechai, I have to take down all of his people. Vayivez Beinav seemed small in his eyes, seemed mocking to his eyes to only kill him. So what's Haman similar to? There was a bird. It made its nest at the edge of the sea, and the water washed away its nest. So the bird got very upset, and he says, I'm going to teach that sea a lesson. I'm going to make the sea all dry. And so the bird takes some water in its mouth and pours it on the dry land. And then it goes back and takes earth from the dry land and pours it into the sea. And it's standing there doing this again and again, taking water onto the land, taking dirt into the sea. So his friend comes and tells him, what are you doing? What do you think you're going to accomplish here? He says, don't you see what I'm doing? I'm destroying the sea. So that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam said to Haman. Don't you think you're foolish? You think you're going to be able to take them down? It's no different than that bird. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I wanted to destroy them. Numerous times they got me upset. And in the end, I didn't. So you're going to be able to do it. So Hashem says it's not going to work. You're going to be the one who's going to die, not them. And this is the theme of the Megillah. The idea that v'nafohu is to show us that Hashem is paying attention. And we have to pay attention as we learn the Megillah. We are not learning Jewish history. When we read the Megillah, our celebration of Purim is about now. It's not about then. When we read the Megillah, we're learning a message that's relevant to today. We read the Megillah, we end, and we make a blessing. And the blessing is not about the Megillah, it's about Purim. That's why we end the Megillah, we roll up the Megillah, and we make a blessing. What are you saying? Wait, why is the Megillah all rolled up? What does the blessing say? Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the world, who fights our fights. Present, not past. Harav et Rivenu. Vehadan et Dinenu. You judge our case. then okay, et nikmatenu, you take vengeance of those who we have to take vengeance from. Ve'anifra lanu, present tense. He pays back from all those who afflict us. Baruch atah Hashem. What's in the pasuk? Anifra le'amo Yisrael, akel ha-Moshiach. Hashem, who continues to save us. The theme of the Megillah is to awaken us. You remember we discussed the mashal in the beginning of the week of the young prince. The king banished him, and every time trouble comes up in the forest, suddenly a knight appears out of nowhere and saves him. So he realizes, my dad's keeping an eye on me. The story of Purim is the reminder, my dad's keeping an eye on me. It's a reminder for today. So when we read the Megillah, the idea of the V'nahafohu is to realize how it's Hashem paying attention and taking care of what's happening here. So Haman thinks, I can draw lots. And we say, no, you can't draw lots. It's not up to a goral. It's not up to a lot. Hashem's paying attention, and that's what's going to happen here. And one of the points we have to pay attention to that you alluded to before we started, you will find it hard to see the messages of the Megillah written on the surface. Rabbi Beryl Wein, in his introduction to class on the Megillah, used to say, maybe he still says, that Megillat Esther is unique. It's one of the books that were written with the scrutiny of the king it was written about. Mm-hmm. Esther is writing this while she's married to Ahasuerus. So she can't overtly say the man's a dunce, the man's evil, the man's problematic. She can't say that. Esther, yeah. Batichtov Esther Hamalka Batavichai Lumodechai Yehudi et Kol Tokef, the pasuk says. Sounds like Esther wrote it. Shalchalem Esther Lachachamim Kivuni Ledorot. So Haman's drawing lots, and the point of the lots is to tell him it's not about lots. Hashem is paying attention, and Hashem's not going to let you get away with it. And Haman comes to Ahasuerus. We discussed, and this is what we ended with last time. He discusses the nation. Yeshno am echad. He says, echad, Hashem who is one. Yeshno. He's tired of his people. He's fed up with them. Don't worry, they're no longer the chosen people. The 70 years are up. We got away with it. We made a decree not to rebuild this temple. You see, he must be tired of them. So Hashem says, not true. I never sleep. I don't change my mind. Yesh no am echad. They're Shnehon Rav Revan. Hashem says, even yeshno, even when they're sleeping, they're doing it for a mitzvah. They sit down for a Shabbos meal. They say, oh, kvod Shabbos. They go to sleep Shabbos afternoon. They say, in honor of Shabbos. Hashem says, no, it's they're doing it right. Ahasuerus says to Haman, what do you want from them? That's what their Torah says. Haman says, if they kept them the way they should, that's fine. If they kept our holidays the way they keep their holidays, fine. But when we say it's Turkey Day, how many Jews are busy going and having a Thanksgiving dinner? We have our legal holidays, and they don't take them as seriously. Their holidays, they take seriously. You see, they're mocking you. We have a holiday, Kalandes. What's Kalandes? That's the holidays. They had a holiday when they would light candles, when darkness would begin, on the solstices, right? They would celebrate different holidays. They don't do that. Saturnalia, right?
That's Saturnalia.
Oh, good. What's that?
What do you call it? Worshipping Saturn.
Right, but when?
When? It's very close to the winter solstice.
Okay.
December 25th.
So the Rabban Shalom tells them, you don't like their holidays. Thanks to you, I'll add a holiday. And Ahasuerus agrees. They send out a decree. The problem is they can never rescind the decree. So there's a long midrash here. They discussed how to do it. Haman says, their God is old. Don't worry about it. He's done doing miracles. I know he took down Pharaoh I know he saved the Jews, but look, Nebuchadnezzar got away with it. He destroyed his temple and everything went fine. The Jews are scattered. You see, their God is no longer strong. It's over. He's an old man. So they liked his idea. That's what Ahasuerus needed to hear in order to approve. Meaning, one of the themes of the Megillah is Hashem is still with us. He's running the show. And their mistake was they said no one can do this. Hashem's not getting involved. They wrote the following letters. Peace be upon you forever. This is Ahasuerus' letter to the people. I want you to know there's a man in our midst who is not an ancient citizen of Persia. And he is a descendant of great people. He is a descendant of kings. He is a descendant of Amalek. His name is Haman. And he asked me for a very small favor. He asked me about a nation that's living in our midst that is more decrepit than all the other nations. And even though they are so little and unworthy, they are very arrogant. And they never want anything good for anyone but themselves. They want to harm us. And they're easily cursing the king. Every time they pray, they say, Hashem Melech, our king is God, Olam Ve'ed forever. Avadim Goyim Me'atzo, they pray that nations should be removed from God's land. So you see, they're cursing the king. They're praying that the land of Israel be redeemed from Ahasuerus. They pray in their prayers, La'asot Nekama Bagoyim, God should take revenge from the nations. This is all written in Ahasuerus' letter. Right? And they deny all the good we do for them, Ahasuerus writes. We're so kind to these people. Look at what happened to that poor man, Paro. They went down to Egypt. Paro accepted them nicely. He was good to them. He gave them the best territories. He fed them even though there was a famine. And he gave them all the good of his land of Egypt. Well, they were only asked to help build the king's palace. And they had good jobs as builders. But you see, they took them down. They destroyed Pharaoh. And they came to Pharaoh with a lie. They said, we just want to go bring sacrifices for 3 days, and then we're coming back. And if you don't mind, we're such good citizens, lend us your gold and silver vessels. Guys, you see, these are protocols of Zion, right? This is the ancient protocols of Zion. It says, lend us your gold and silver and your clothing. They lent them. Look at how good the Egyptians were to the Jews. They lent them their gold and their silver and all their good clothing. And they all loaded many donkeys as they left. And they took full advantage of the Egyptians. Their own Torah says, Vayinatzilu et Mitzrayim. And they ran away. Paro heard they're running away. So he ran after them and said, give me back my money. And this is firm Torah, but this is what the Medrash says. Wow. Paro says, this is all Nachshverish's letter. He says, give me back my money. What did they do? There was one guy among them. His name was Moshe ben Amram. He was a good sorcerer. Notice, Hashem's out of the picture. He was a good sorcerer. And he picked up this stick, and he said some incantation of the stick, and he hit the sea and destroyed it. And they all went through the dry land. And they all went through. I don't know how they did it, Ahasuerus writes. I don't know what incantation Moshe used. Paro saw that the sea was gone, and it's easy to follow the Jews. It's all dry. So he ran after them. He says, give me back my money. And he says, I don't know how Moshe did it. He must have said a new incantation on his staff. He was able to push all the Egyptians back into the sea, and they all drowned in the sea. And look at those Jews. They don't know how to thank people for favors. Pharaoh did so many favors for them, and they couldn't show any appreciation for what Pharaoh had done. Don't you guys all realize? Let me tell you another story about the Jews. There was a great-grandfather of our own dear Haman. His name was Amalek, and there was a war. So it says Amalek came to fight Israel. Where did Amalek come from? He went and asked Bilam, what should I do? So Bilam said, look at what they did to the Egyptians. The Egyptians were so nice to them. and they were able to take them down. If the Egyptians were so nice to them, they took them down. Certainly they could do that to everyone else. So Bilam said, you have to make war for them, because that's the only way. They keep saying they're descendants of Avram. You're also a descendant of Avram. You could take the same merits they had. So Amalek heard from Bilam. Bilam said, it's a good idea. You should attack them. And they did. You're a descendant of Avram. You also have a right to the land of Israel. So Moshe, you remember I told you guys about that Moshe? So he had a student named Yoshua bin Nun. This Yoshua was so cruel, he had no mercy. Moshe said to him, I want you to choose men and go fight Amalek. I don't know what men he chose. I don't know if they were sorcerers or good warriors. What did Moshe do? He went up on a mountain with a stick. I don't know what he did with that stick. But when the Amalekites came, I don't know what his incantation was, but the Amalekites suddenly had no more strength, and they were able to win all of Amalek. Then came Sihon and Og. They were brave warriors. All they were doing was protecting the land of Israel. No one was able to take them down. I don't know what sorcery they used, but somehow they killed them too. Then the Jews came to the Midianites. I don't know how, but they won 5 kings of Midian. And you know what else that student of Moshe did? He took Israel into the land of Canaan. Not only did he take the land away from them, he killed 31 kings, divided the land to Israel. He had no mercy. And whoever didn't get killed was taken in as slaves. Along came Sisera. Sisera says, hey, I'm a king in this territory. I don't know what they did to him, because Sisera was in the middle of a war against them. And with some kind of trick, they were able to get a seed to come streaming down at Sisera and wipe out his whole army without a war.
The
Sea of Kishon. It says they were in the Kishon Valley, and suddenly waters came down against them. It wasn't the time of year. No one expected it. A flood came down, wiped away all of Sisera's army. Their first king, Shaul, he went and fought my great-grandfather Amalek, and he killed 100,000 horsemen in one day. He had no mercy. Wiped them all out. I don't know how he did it. This is Haman's letter. But Haman is playing it on the defensive. This is what anti-Semites always do. They will always describe the Jews as though they're the ones hurting other people. And even though the end of Haman's speech is you have to murder every Jew, every man, woman, and child, the key to telling people go murder someone else is to tell them, oh, you don't know how bad that person is. You don't know. So what Haman is doing is the same thing that the media has been doing to us throughout our history. What did the Nazis do to get people to agree to kill Jews? They spread propaganda. The Jews are killing everyone, don't you know? They're slaughtering Jewish babies. Why, how could the Christians get blood libels out on the night of Pesach? If you tell everyone, look, the Jews, they're slaughtering babies. There's no basis for it anywhere. There's no such thing. Never been done. But it doesn't matter. If I can convince everyone that the person the libel is about is cruel and dangerous, now I can kill him. So what Haman's doing is, he doesn't reach the end of his letter so fast. His point is, this whole letter will describe how the Jews have a history, and every time he doesn't tell you, Pharaoh killed millions of Jews, took their babies from them and killed them. That doesn't hit the letter. Pharaoh was so nice to them. He doesn't tell you, hey, Amalek attacked, we didn't do anything to them. No, look at how they wiped out Amalek. He doesn't tell you every step of the way, and now we're continuing how Sisera afflicted the Jews. We move on.
Muslim group of people to Leah. They do like this. They write like this, and they give it to smart Muslims in the universities. And what they write is not a lie. They just check out. They don't tell everything.
Right. So it's phenomenal. The Medrash is playing out for us the letter that Haman sends to the nations. And he writes, you know what they did to my own great-grandfather, Agog? They were nice to him, right? They left him alive at the end of the war. And then a man whose name is Shmuel, he was, we know Shmuel the prophet, right? He came and cut him and let him be eaten by birds. And I don't know how he killed him. But you hear, he killed him in an unnatural way. After that, they had a king named David ben Yishai. And he would always go against the nations. He had no mercy. He wiped them out. After that, his son Shlomo, he built the Jews this house. He called it Beit HaMikdash. I don't know what they had in that Beit HaMikdash, Haman writes, but they'd go into that Beit HaMikdash before every war. They'd do their sorcery, and they'd go out and destroy the whole world. No one could take them down. Once they had this house, they were always successful. And then, things were going so well for them, they rebelled against that God of theirs. They thought they're good enough without him. And anyways, that God of theirs became very old. And so Nebuchadnezzar came and burnt down that house of theirs and exiled them. And now they're in our midst. But they're still so disgusting. Even though they're in exile, they look down at us. They don't accept our religion. And so we've all agreed that the right thing to do, all the king's advisors have agreed, is to wipe them out. And so we've drawn lots what time we should do it, and the lot fell out on the 13th of the month of Adar. When you get these letters, I want you guys to prepare for that day. Your job is to eradicate the Jews, young and old, children and women, on one day. And don't leave a single soul behind. And then they sign these letters. This is the long letter that Haman is sending out, the decree. The letters are signed. And Haman comes with his clan, and they're all celebrating. They're going to do it now. They're on their way out of the palace after they've written this wonderful anti-Semitic letter. And they meet Mordechai. Mordechai sees them. He sees their smiles. And he realizes danger is lurking. He sees three children. He runs to the three children. And the Haman and his clan see Mordechai running after the children. So they go after Mordechai. They say, we know these Jews are sorcerers. Let's hear what's happening. Mordechai catches up with one kid. He tells him, what pasuk did you learn today? So the kid tells him, I learned the pasuk, Al tira mipachat pitom. Don't be scared if suddenly something scary comes up. Umishoat l'shein ki tavo. Even though the wicked say they're bringing a shoah, they're bringing a destruction, don't be scared. He goes to the second kid and he says, what pasuk did you learn today? He says, I learned the pasuk, Utsu eitza v'tufar, daberu davar v'lo yakum. They've made plots, it's going to be undone. They've said things, it won't stand. Ki imanu kel, Hashem is with us. He runs to the third kid, what did you learn today? He says, I learned the pasuk, v'ad zikna anihu. Hashem says, as old as you get, I'm with you. V'ad seva ani esbol, and doesn't matter how old you are, I'm going to carry you. Ani asiti, I made you. V'ani esa, and I'll carry you. V'ani esbol v'amalet, I'm going to deal and take care of you and help you escape. Mordechai hears that, and he laughs, and he's happy. Haman asks him, why are you so happy? What did the kids tell you? So Mordechai says, the kids told me not to be so worried, even though you made a plot against us. Haman gets upset, and he says, the first people I kill are these children. And that's Haman's plan. Part of Haman's plan is that the first people that he intends to kill are the children of Israel, as we will see. Haman's plan, and he's prepared to do it, is to kill the children first. Haman says to Ahasuerus, their God, he hates when the people are promiscuous. If you prepare them women of ill repute, if you can bring them down, then you will be successful. So Ahasuerus made the 7-day party, and this the Megillah doesn't reveal to us openly. The goal of the 7-day party was to bring the Jewish people down the way they were brought down in the days of Bilaam. Haman's advice was, you bring women of ill repute, you feed them, you give them to drink, you get the Jews to be tipsy, and then bring them down. And then, you remember we said everyone's goal was to knock down the Jews. So the beginning of the Megillah is already Haman's advice on how to get the Jews to lose their status by Hashem. Mordechai had some secret information. He knew what was the plan. So Mordechai gets up and he says, no one's allowed to go to that party. No one's allowed to eat at that party. The only reason he invited you is to be able to say bad about you. This way, he'll be able to make decrees against you. They didn't listen to him. The Jews went. 18,500 Jews went to the party. They ate. They drank. they got drunk, and then they went with the women of ill repute. So the beginning of the Megillah conceals from us what really happens at the beginning. Ooh, I told you guys I was uncool.